This is CICK News. I drove to Sikadak on Thursday last week to meet Anissa Watson at a community garden. The community of Sikadak is well on its way to becoming food sovereign by raising their own chickens and pigs. They have a food-safe kitchen in the community center, massive gardens for growing seasonal veggies and fruit trees, as well as a recently built greenhouse for off-season growing. We met at the back edge of a farm close to a treed area where we stood in front of 10 piles of wood chips. Within these wood chips were mycelium with the power to change how we in the north manage wood waste. These mycelium have undergone rigorous training to learn to eat these wood chips with the goal for them to eat eventually bad wood, such as creosote-soaked rail ties and slash piles to minimize burning or waste wood entering our precious river system. Here's Anissa now from Sikadak. Where are we?
So we're in the community of Sikadak. This is a Gitxsan community, probably about 15 kilometers out of Hazelton, BC. We are going down into an area where they're just working to develop some food security sites. Mm-hmm. And what we're looking at here in front of us, even though it looks just like a pile of wood chips, is a field testing site for a project called Coldfire.
That's Anissa Watson, the Director of Program Execution for Skeena Watershed Conservation Coalition. A local innovation project called Coldfire is using mushrooms to tackle wildfire risks and waste wood management. Partnering through the Fire Grand Challenge, the team is testing how fungi can speed up the natural decay of wood waste, turning it into compost that stores carbon, keeping nutrients in the soil, and promoting healthy regeneration. 10 piles have been created as part of this science-based field trial in the community of Sikadak.
What we did in the early summer is we had our technical partner, Coalitions and Collaboratives, come up from Colorado. Those mushrooms were cultivated off of trees, so wild cultivation. So these mushrooms were trained to eat this specific wood in the lab, and then they were grown. So their next generations of DNA were basically like trained specifically to eat this wood here. So we started off with four different types of mushrooms and then chose the best quality one from the lab experiments to inoculate the piles with.
All summer, the Coldfire team has been hard at work gathering and chipping waste wood for their mushroom-based wildfire prevention project. 3 weeks ago, they inoculated the piles with moist mushroom spawn blocks supplied by Smithereens Mushrooms. Each pile has 9 inoculation points, and already the piles have dropped nearly 2 feet as the fungi get to work breaking down this wood. The team's been back in the field collecting data, measuring pile size, moisture levels, and carbon content to track how well the mushrooms are transforming waste wood into rich, healthy soil, which is where Anissa and I met to have this discussion.
Last week, we harvested a bunch of mushrooms. It looks like I think some other folks were harvesting mushrooms off of here, which is exactly the point. Yeah. So we've been getting oyster mushrooms off of all these piles. And what we're looking at is just like, how quick is this happening? How much moisture are they holding? And then in about 3 years, we're expecting these piles to be basically broken down into a woody compost material for the ground here. Yeah. The unique thing about Sikadak is that they are a community that's expanding and really pushing food security and food sovereignty.
The Coldfire team sourced much of their waste wood from a new greenhouse site that had to be cleared, chipping the material on location. Right beside it sits a thriving community forest with apple, plum, and cherry trees, and a perfect example of how local waste wood management can support regeneration. The key is having a system in place. When crews clear and chip at the same time, the process runs smoothly. Their long-term goal is to see this mushroom-based wood recycling approach used in logging cut blocks across the region.
Our main concern was around wildfire mitigation and the impact of clear-cut logging on both soil and then what's happening with the waste wood, which is often just getting either left or burned. Either way, it becomes a fire hazard and all the carbon that's being released and the emissions into the atmosphere. And so we want to be able to offer a viable solution to loggers or to forestry to say, hey, chip it. Leave it on the ground. As soon as wood is chipped, even if there's no fungal inoculation, it becomes a way less of a risk for wildfire. So it reduces that wildfire risk almost immediately.
Why?
Because when it's chipped, it holds moisture. As these piles were chipped, if it gets a rain or whatever, it'll hold moisture. These piles will stay moist, like you can dig your hand down into them, even in a hot spell. And then they're also helping the soil to recover. In this area, like, that's pretty healthy soil. It wasn't a clear cut, but when that happens in out on the territory or out on the Lac Yip or in the forest, what we're finding is when you go in and you clear cut, you're also exposing a ton of soil to the sun, to the elements, to the rain. So you're really degrading the soil ecology, and this process builds soil ecology. So that's also what we're looking at.
And that's because you want more nitrogen? Like, you were talking about the nitrogen carbon.
Yeah. So this is a way cold fire stores carbon in a stable state in the soil. So what we're looking at is, like, what is the ratio of the carbon to nitrogen ratio that comes from cold fire, just so that we understand, like, how it could be, like, is there the possibility of using the compost at the end of it as, like, a byproduct that could be sold. And then we also just want to know, like, how much carbon is being stored. We do know that none is being released into the atmosphere. So yeah, it's basically we're doing the exact same thing that fire does, but without burning.
And so in this phase here, when you've got the chips, these are chips from healthy trees, but the goal is for, like, treated wood, or we were talking about, like, creosote-soaked rail ties and things like that.
Yeah.
So what process do you start introducing those sort of maybe more, like, toxic or wood that would take more work?
Yeah, so that would be, I think, a different process. The nice thing about this is that this is healthy wood, so it can be left in the field. When we're talking about mycomitigation for things like creosote or toxins, you would approach field testing much differently.
Mycomitigation is quite simply the use of fungi to break down pollutants. Here's a video from Skeena Watershed Conservation Coalition's Instagram, read by Shantae Mitchell, explaining that process further.
These fungi release enzymes that break down tough plant fibers, speeding up the decay, turning that debris into fire-resistant, nutrient-rich compost. The compost feeds new growth and acts like a sponge, holding moisture, supporting biodiversity, and making forests more resilient to future fires. And instead of slash burning, which can contribute as much as 12% of British Columbia's greenhouse gas emissions, we're choosing a different path. By using cold fire, we sequester that carbon into the ground as nutrients rather than releasing it as emissions. It's about sharing natural, regenerative techniques that anyone can use to care for the land. This isn't about selling a product. It's about working with nature, not against it. And now we're bringing it to our forest with hope, care, and collaboration. We're not here to control the forest. We're here to work with it, to listen, to heal, and protect what protects us.
So it's always do no harm. Any sort of mycomitigation or bioremediation approaches where you're supporting the land to heal itself, the human aspect is do no harm. When it comes to things like creosote or treated wood, you're dealing with some different types of materials. So say, for example, with creosote, where you have that, like, oily kind of polycyclic hydrocarbon sort of stuff in there, you have to be very careful about containing it. So this type of site wouldn't work for that. You would look at doing it in more of a contained vessel. So it's the mycelium that are doing the work for us, and the fruiting bodies are sort of that extra bonus that we see.
Yummy bonuses. I like those.
Yeah.
This bioremediation team's next project takes on something tougher: creosote treated rail ties. Working with bioremediation specialist Lila Darwish, they trained mushrooms in the lab to break down small pieces of the toxic wood. The star performer? Turkey tail mushrooms, known for digesting oils and pollutants. The next step is to grow those lab specimens into full mushroom spawn for field testing.
So that basically those mushrooms, as they get larger and ready to, like, fruit, they're constantly having more access to creosote as their food source. Mm-hmm. Here in this, like, field testing with the cold fire, I ate mushrooms off of here last week.
Okay.
So this is healthy and safe. With creosote, we wouldn't eat those mushrooms, right? Yeah. You're still dealing with toxins a lot of times. So you have to be careful of yourself, of the land, of anything that might come in contact with it, wildlife, birds, whatever. Mm. And being really aware that you're not increasing the risk of toxins to get spread, that you're really containing them and dealing with them. So it's not always a perfect solution. We're still, I think in 2026, we'll be able to do a bit more work on the creosote. We were very focused on this year. So we're really interested in, figuring out then the best inoculation method for mushrooms and mycelium into a creosote tie.
Along the upper Skeena, old rail ties have been pushed into nearby ditches, some right above local streams, so that when it rains, runoff passes through those creosote-soaked ties and into the water. The team hopes their mushroom remediation work could one day be applied on a large scale, but that's still quite a long ways down the road.
So our role in the Fire Grant Challenge and working on this project here is to see how can they scale up this innovation in a Gitxsan community or in a First Nation community. So there's like a whole piece of that to be like, does this work up here? So a ton of this like project specifically was on just like relationship building and understanding different cultural philosophies and approaches and protocols, data sovereignty and collection processes, and then recognizing that nobody is up here is really an expert mycologist, but we're all expert land people. So leaning into folks who have knowledge in other areas to finish this project has been really helpful.
The Cold Fire team is building partnerships to expand their mushroom-based soil restoration work. Next year, they're planning a project with a Gitxsan whelp interested in applying the method on damaged cut blocks, using fungi to generate soil after cultural or prescribed burns. They're also exploring new techniques like liquid inoculation, which sprays mushroom juice directly onto soil or wood chips, an easier, low-waste alternative to plastic spawn blocks.
So this is actually 3 years in the making, being able to work with Jeff Ravage and the Coalitions and Collaboratives crew, and then the community of Sikidak we've been partnered with for a number of years on a number of different projects, but they were really gracious in giving us the space for the next 3 years. And very interested in the outcome because of their work towards food security and agricultural expansion here. Yeah. They are nearly a food sovereign community with the food sources that they have here. And then any way that we can collaborate and provide education and resources, because it's great to be able to have the connections with partners. And like I said, Smithereens Mushrooms has been awesome. Like, they've just helped us with so many random requests. Mm-hmm. And they're starting to build their myco remediation branch of their business as well. So the more that we can partner, the better, because we're not experts in the mycology field, as I mentioned. But the more that we can have our local capacity to do some of this work too is also really one of our goals.
The team also hopes to offer mycology and myco remediation training through the SDOT Farm School's Adult Education Program. By learning to identify, harvest, and cultivate local fungi, participants can help preserve rare mushroom species that support soil health and climate resilience. The goal ultimately is to safely store and grow these beneficial mushrooms for future restoration projects. Thank you so much to Anissa Watson for taking the time to speak with me and show me more about the project called Cold Fire. If you'd like to learn more, visit Skeena Watershed Conservation Coalition on Facebook or on their website. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.